TCG's English Department presents A Door into the Dark, a podcast where we explore literature from the junior and senior cycle courses. This week, we are starting with our sixth year higher level single text, Macbeth, by William Shakespeare. I'm your host for today's episode, Catherine Hickey, and I'm joined by Sean O'Brien and Oren Kavanagh, and we will be discussing the topic of ambition in Macbeth.
Welcome to your life. There's no turning back. Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to.
Okay, so today's topic for our English podcast is the Shakespeare play Macbeth, and in particular we're looking at the ambition in Macbeth's, looking at ambition in Macbeth, and in particular looking, I suppose, at the central characters Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. And today we have Oren Kavanagh and Sean O'Brien, who are going to talk about Macbeth. We're both all sixth year English teachers, and we're just going to look at this idea of, I suppose, who is more ambitious? Is it Macbeth or is it Lady Macbeth? And does that trait or character trait show them as ruthless? Who's more ruthless? Is it Macbeth? Do we feel more sympathy for Macbeth at the end of it? Do we feel more sympathy for Lady Macbeth? That kind of idea. Are they both ruthless in their drive for ambition? Do they have any redeeming qualities or redeeming features that we can kind of feel any sympathy for them towards the end of the play? So, what do we think? Any comments, any questions, any thoughts?
The first thing that came to my mind when I was thinking about the theme of ambition in the play was that how ambition is thought of now is very different to how ambition used to be thought of by the audience at the time of Macbeth's first production back in the very early 1600s. So nowadays, all you students in TCG who are listening to this you're encouraged to be ambitious, to try to do what's absolutely best for you and your own personal circumstances. And that's kind of seen as a guiding light in your life. You know, you're encouraged to be as ambitious, to maximize your potential in every which way, whether that be in education, in sport, with your friendships, all that sort of stuff. But when Shakespeare wrote Macbeth, people had a much more clear sense of where they were supposed to fit into the world. And so ambition was not actually encouraged, because you were supposed to just fit into your position. If you're a peasant or if you're a yeoman, you're supposed to stay as a yeoman. You're supposed to stay as a peasant. If you're the king, you are supposed to be the king. You don't have to be ambitious. You were born into the position. The same with all of the thanes like Macbeth, like Banquo, like Macduff. So to even just be ambitious in any way automatically makes them like an evil character or a bad character by the judgment of that time. So I thought that was the first thing once I saw ambition was like, now I just thought it was really interesting that the idea of ambition has changed totally from the time of the play to now.
Yeah, we talk about it as a flaw. What's Macbeth's flaw? Yeah. What's Lady Macbeth's flaw? It's their ambition. Yeah. Whereas you're right, we wouldn't consider that a flaw in a character today.
Yeah.
So that's another layer to that idea of they're tragic. The tragic hero and the concept of the tragedy in Socrates and what he built up, and that the tragic hero falls from a great height, and what is there? Yeah, that's it. A flaw or a weakness in them. So that idea that ambition is a weakness or something that's seen as negative, rather than now, we try and get the kids to be motivated and ambitious and, have a bit of drive to them.
Who do you think, Catherine, is the more ambitious of the two?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, we've had this kind of conversation.
Yeah, I think we're going to disagree on this.
Oren thinks that Lady Macbeth is, if I'm right, am I?
No. Well, yes, I think she's the more ambitious of the two, but also the more sympathetic of the two.
The more sympathetic of the two. And it was also something that we were talking about in terms of, you know, we constantly talk about Lady Macbeth and her ambition for her husband. And I think we were also having that idea of, well, like, but does she not also get to rise up the ranks? And you were kind of talking a little bit about that and kind of her motivations. I don't know if you want
to. Yeah, well, if he's going to be king, she's going to be queen. You know, I do think it's presented as very much motivated by her ambition for him, because that was the only route her ambition could go through. And they are very much presented as a united front at the beginning. They're,
my,
you know,
dearest partner in greatness.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a bit unusual. You know, the amount he relies on her. Mm. He talks to her not just about everyday home life things, but about his political ambitions. So their relationship is unusual. But I think her ambition is, I think both of their ambition is clear from the start. Both of them have pretty much the same thought. Macbeth hides it a little better at the beginning, but she admits to her thought a little bit, you know, more obviously than he does. Mm. And she admits to the ambition more obviously than he does.
Yeah.
And I think I suppose, yeah, in terms of who has more ambition, going back to that, probably isn't Macbeth, because he is the one who constantly is, what do I do next? What do I do next? What do I do next? And I suppose Lady Macbeth is so extreme in what she does. Mm. You know, and unsex me here, and you're too full of the milk of human kindness.
Dash the baby's brains out.
Exactly. You know, I suppose her idea is so extreme, so maybe that's why we kind of latch onto that. But it is Macbeth. And like you say, at the start, they're a united front. But after that, he hides things from her. Mm.
Yeah.
He decides to, you know, he's the one that decides to murder Banquo, assassinate Banquo, not just murder Banquo, assassinate Banquo. He's the one that goes behind her. He doesn't tell her anything about Macduff and killing his family. You know, Lady Macbeth comes out at the end and kind of says, you know, says, oh, the Thane of Fife had a wife, you know, she's kind of making these connections now, like, why didn't, and it's really, that's, I suppose that's where it all goes wrong for them, isn't it, that, you know,
they divide
yeah. And their ambition and their, maybe their goals are different after that, and I think it's like kind of those are redeeming qualities as well, if we kind of think about that. And I think it's very hard, I suppose, yeah, Lady Macbeth, she does go crazy and she does regret what she does at the end. Or she regrets what she, you know, her actions at the end of the play. But do we see her redeeming qualities from the very beginning? She's this, you know, strong. But then again, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with a strong woman? And again, this idea of, we'll be looking into masculinity as well. But we don't really see any kind of, like with Macbeth, he comes out and he's the hero and he's, you know, Malone's bridegroom and all those kinds. You know, we get all those wonderful words. Kind of associate with Macbeth, and we see how wonderful he is, and he's really kind of brought to us as a wonderful soldier and loyal.
Yeah, we have to like him at the beginning,
but we don't see that with Lady Macbeth. So then, just like, what are her redeeming qualities? Does she have redeeming qualities? What are they?
I think it takes a bit more reading in. It's shoved in our face, like Macbeth. You know, look at him; he's great. Mm. He's brave at the beginning. Lady Macbeth, we see her reading the letter when we meet her first. Mm. But if you read in a little bit, what she has to do is call down the evil spirits to come and unsex her here. So if she wants her femininity gone, if she wants to be filled with direst cruelty, it means, you know, that doesn't come naturally to her. Okay, so, right. you know, if you read in a little bit, then this is, it's not a state of being that comes naturally to her. She has a specific purpose, which is get her husband or herself, whichever you like, on the throne. But once she's achieved that, you know, she can go back to, she wants to be, maybe she wants to be a good queen, you know,
right.
maybe she wants to rule well. She would like to be satisfied in their, what they've achieved now with her husband, her dearest partner in greatness. And it's Macbeth who ruins everything, really, you know, who can't be satisfied, who can't, you know, who can't deal with what they've done.
But is it his fault for that? Because he has heard, I've been looking through some mocks and correcting them and stuff like that, and people are mentioning the fact that because Banquo is present when Macbeth gets the prophecy, he's immediately suspicious of him. But Macbeth is also present for Banquo's prophecy, and that is like in just exactly the same at exactly the same point that that Macbeth's seed of ambition is sown by the witches. The seed of the destruction of it is also there because he also hears Banquo's prophecy at the same time. So he knows that his line cannot last, or certainly you know, they don't seem to talk about having another child. Like they yeah. don't talk about having a new child who might eventually marry Banquo's son. And like, there are all these technicalities of why Macbeth and Lady Macbeth can't continue on their line. Like, or they've just seen it in those terms anyway.
Yeah, but so, that is it only Macbeth who's seen it in those terms, you know? Has he...
And why isn't Lady Macbeth?
Yeah, there's no conversation with Lady Macbeth about killing Banquo or, you know...
Or Banquo's prophecy. They never discuss his prophecy because they stop at Macbeth's prophecy. Their conversation ends at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Their relationship kind of ends at that point, doesn't it?
You had mentioned something, Catherine, earlier about how their goals change, but I think I'd agree with what Oren was saying, that actually they've kind of achieved their goal. Like they've got to the top, so to speak. They're king and queen at the start of act three. They've been crowned, and so the goal now is to stay at the top.
Yeah, I suppose it's maybe not supposed to be the goal, but then I suppose, but in terms of maybe, I suppose their goal is still the same, but their actions are not the same.
Yeah, so Macbeth, definitely.
Yeah, so Macbeth's actions change and his, you know, behaviors change and becomes more secretive. Whereas she is dealing with that. And going back to this idea, I suppose what Oren was saying as well about her calling on the spirits to, in order to be able to do this, she actually says she can't, you know, if he hadn't looked like my grandfather, I would have done the deed. And so she's never involved in the violence, she's never there. So is, you know, therefore is his ambition the one is he more driven than she is?
I think not, because I think it's just that he has the skill set to enact their ambitions. So he is used to murder. We hear about him unseaming someone from the knave to the chaps. He's used to battle, to conflict, to killing people, and she is not. And so when she has presented to him, well, what we have to do is kill someone, he's comfortable in that space, whereas she is not. And so it's like he takes on more of the responsibility for it. And yeah, their roles, once their roles reverse and that she is in a more submissive position and he is taking charge, so to speak, that fits him more comfortably. And he just sort of continues on like that and ignores her and forgets all of the things that brought them to that point. Kind of gets selfish with information, or, you know, holds on to things.
He almost cuts off half his character at that point, doesn't he? And just says, I'm just going to be the kind of killing machine, or I'm going to be the ruthless action man of action.
Yeah.
And cut off the bit of him that he knows is damned. You know, he admits himself, I know I'm damned, so I'm just going to keep wading in this course that I'm on.
Yeah.
So do you think that they're both ruthless, equally ruthless, or do you think one is more ruthless in their goal or in their ambition than another?
Equally ruthless, but it's the sympathetic part that gets me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say they're equally ruthless, but that he has the tools that she does not to continue in their ruthlessness, if you get me. That, like, because he's used to murder, that... He's more willing to live in that world, and because she's not used to it, she's suffering from the trauma of the murder that they've committed, and so she doesn't know what she's doing anymore. It's like they waded out into the water and he was able to swim and she wasn't. Yeah. You know.
And actually, it's maybe a little harsh to taking back that I said they're equally ruthless, because in the end of the day, yes, she manipulates Macbeth, she pushes it, she instigates this, he kills Duncan. But after that, she would have been done, you know, and it obviously haunts her that we never hear her reaction to the fact that he killed Banquo and tried to kill Fleance, but certainly to the whole family of Macduff being murdered. You know, we can't assume that she would have been on board with that if he'd even asked her. So maybe it's a bit harsh to just assume she's as ruthless as him.
I think that's important at the end of the play, you know, because Macbeth is still, I suppose, what is it, half, you know, trudging through blood. If I, you know, I'm halfway. What's the quote?
'Twere as weary to go backwards as I'm so far steeped in blood that it would be as easy
to return. Whereas tedious as to go.
As to go. Yeah.
So like, he's still going, but she has very much felt the effects, and like sleep is such a motif in this play of, you know, sleep is what we need to rest our minds, and they're not getting that. And Lady Macbeth, you know, is seen sleepwalking, and it's kind of consumed her whole. She does feel the guilt. She does feel sorry and regret for what she's done. You know, with her when she comes out, out down the spot, and you know, and Macbeth has that kind of nihilistic moment there at the end as well when he finds out about Lady Macbeth's death. And she should have died hereafter. I think that's a really kind of tender moment, and that idea of, you know, how far have I dragged her in, I suppose, you could, you know, the way that kind of what you're talking there about, that she would have stopped at a certain point. You know, she doesn't feel the need to kill Macduff's family, you know, what for, etc. So I think kind of what you're both saying is there is that, it, you know, her ambition doesn't supersede her husband's. He is very much, the one, his ambition is what, is driving him, and what's driving, I suppose, the plot of the play is as well.
But he doesn't sleep either, you know, like the, you know, full of scorpions is my mind, dear wife, you know.
Terrible dreams that shake us nightly and.
So
it comes down to, I think, you know, so when we're trying to decide, well, who feels guilty and who doesn't. So who do we feel sympathy for? And I think everybody, or most of us, see that Macbeth redeems himself in some way. You know, he has to pay for his crimes. He has to die at the end. But we can look on him with a bit more of a gentle eye, or with kindness at the end. Whereas I feel like Lady Macbeth doesn't get any of that. Mm. Whereas when you weigh up what they did, you know, their crimes, say, when you weigh up their crimes, oh, she manipulated him. He murdered many people and became a tyrant. And, you know, so his crimes are much worse than her. They both go mad. You know, they're both plagued by guilt and sleepless nights. And they just deal with it in different ways. She goes mad and ends her life. He goes mad and really ends his life by fighting on a battle that he knows he's going to lose. So why is it that we have all this, you know, sympathy, and we can still feel for Macbeth, as bad as person as he was, but we can't feel for Lady Macbeth?
But do you not feel for Lady Macbeth?
I feel she's always painted as, I do, I feel she's painted as the villain, you know, because she started it. If not for her, poor Macbeth would have been, you know, stayed noble.
Do you think that has to do with the fact that she's a woman? That's why she's painted as the villain, because that's what men do. Men go out and murder men, and men go out and have ambition and have drive. But especially in the context of the play, is it the fact that we paint her as a villain? Is it because she's a woman?
You know, I think that might be part of it, but also I think a big part of it is that it's the manipulation, and maybe it's a modern society thing as well, that we can't stand that kind of, you know, the terms like gaslighting and, you know, manipulating in that way, that because she is the manipulator, she's the instigator, as they see it, or as we could see it, to Macbeth's starting. If he'd never murdered Duncan, he wouldn't have gone mad and gone down that route. Not, you know, maybe not wrong. If the roles had been reversed, you know, if it was a man manipulating a woman, if it was Macbeth manipulating Lady Macbeth and gaslighting her and backing her into a corner until she did some terrible deed, maybe Macbeth would be the more villain and she would have the sympathy.
One thing with that, when you're trying to find like different places to absolve different people of guilt, I suppose, I always think back to the often not performed Act 3, Scene 5, when Hecate speaks to the witches, and she describes Macbeth not as evil, not as anything other than, she calls him a wayward son, and really he forgot his place. And like, that's not Lady Macbeth's fault. He was just someone who didn't acknowledge or respect the position that he was in. And so like, it's maybe the witch's fault, and it's like the way that the witches portray it, or the way Hecate, who is, that the witches are subservient to Hecate, but the way that Hecate portrays it actually absolves Lady Macbeth entirely of guilt, that she's not actually in charge of this at all. Which I thought was interesting, that, you know, people within the play don't necessarily think that it's Lady Macbeth's fault at all. That it's actually Macbeth, or it's, as she says, you know, that they're having fun with these piteous little humans, you know.
Yeah, that we as mortals are mere puppets for their plays and their games.
Yeah.
The final, you know, mention of Macbeth and Lady Macbeth at the end of the play condemns both, doesn't it?
Yes.
That dead, this dead butcher and his fiend-like wife, queen.
Yeah,
so it the play, or does Shakespeare maybe condemn them both at the end?
Thank you.